Okay, so this talk is going to be a little bit different from most of the talks we've heard so far. So I'm not going to present lots of new exciting results on supernova remnants. Instead, my goal is to introduce you to this new method for doing X-ray analysis, which has the potentials for some really exciting supernova remnant science in the near future. So this approach is the basis for a new project that I am working on with David Burrows and Vikram Dwarkaras, which we call the SPIES project. So we've heard and seen lots of talks about doing X-ray observations of supernova remnants. So we know that X-ray observations can tell us all sorts of very important things about the supernova remnants, their progenitors, their environments, and the supernova explosions that created them. Now, ideally, we would be able to take these X-ray observations and characterize the entire volume of shocked plasma in the remnant. That is very difficult for several reasons, which basically boils down to the fact that remnants are really complex. So they have very complex spatial morphologies in three dimensions and correspondingly complex spectra. So the spectra varies a lot across the face of the remnant and along the line of sight as well, because these are three-dimensional objects. And relative to that complexity, X-ray observations really don't provide very many photons. There are a few standard ways of doing an X-ray analysis, all of which have some significant drawbacks if you really want to measure the full volume of the shocked plasma. So one common method is to take a few prominent features and extract spectra and fit that spectra to one or two thermal component model, for example. The problem with that is that while if you pick a bright enough feature, it's more likely than other spots to be physically homogeneous. So you kind of eliminate some of these line of sight effects, but not completely. And also, what you learn from one particular spot is not going to be representative of the entire thing. Another approach is to take the entire remnant and divide it up into many, many small little boxes or other shaped regions, extract the spectra from each of those boxes, and again, fit a simple model to that. So this comes much closer to really characterizing the entire remnant, but you run into the same problem in these little boxes where there's still some line of sight effects that you're not taking into account, that there can be multiple different components to the plasma along the line of sight. And perhaps a bigger problem is that in order to get enough photons in every single little box, you need a very deep observation, which is also has a very high spatial resolution. So our new project is to use a new method called smooth particle inference to kind of address some of these drawbacks. So this method was originally developed by my PhD advisor for use on galaxy clusters. And so our plan is to adapt this to use on supernova remnants and apply it to 14 different remnants that have been observed with XMM and try and provide descriptions of the full volume of the shocked plasma in each of those remnants. So basically, this procedure uses a Markov chain in Monte Carlo, and it fits, one of the things that's different is that it fits to the event file directly. So it doesn't, you don't have to extract the spectra from some predetermined spatial region or regions. You don't have to do that ahead of time. It doesn't require particularly long exposure times, and it has the capability to fit very complex spatial and spectral models, including accounting for some line of sight effects. And I'll explain exactly how that works shortly. So this is a brief outline of what's coming up. So I'll tell you how all of that works next, and then I'm just going to very briefly give you a few examples of some results from a couple of remnants, just for the purpose of demonstrating what kinds of things we can do with this type of analysis. And then a brief conclusion, and I'll tell you a little bit about what's in store. Okay, so how does this work? Apparently the clicker doesn't work. Whoops, too far. There we go. Okay, so the basic idea is to represent the plasma as a large collection of smooth particles of plasma. So these are three-dimensional spherical blobs, is what I will call them. It takes a lot less time to say than smooth particle. So each blob is mostly independent. It has its own spectral parameters and its own spatial parameters. So in this example, each one can have a different temperature, a different ionization age, different abundances, whatever we want to say for the basic model. They're also free to move around independently and even be in the same location, so they can overlap with other blobs. So in that way, we can account for some of these line-of-sight effects where you might have multiple plasma components lined up in the same two-dimensional location. So the SBI code, there you go. It simulates photons being emitted from each of the blobs according to their particular model, and then takes those photons and runs them each through the XMM response. So either EPIC or RGS, it can do either one. And basically, what that does is it converts the sky coordinates and the wavelength of the simulated photon into detector coordinates and pulse height. So then it has this collection of model events that it compares to the observed events. So no extracting of spectra or images directly. So then a Markov chain Monte Carlo looks at that comparison, sees how well it fits, changes all of the parameters around, and repeats the whole thing. So, and it keeps doing this until it gets a good fit and then continues to go. So if you want more information on the process, so these are some of the papers which are focused on galaxy clusters that explain this. So we can see it in action here. So this shows all of the blobs moving around between the different iterations. So you can see it starts out with a kind of random distribution. They're just sort of splattered across the image. But pretty soon they start to resemble the observed morphology, which you can see down here in the raw image. So once the chain has converged, then you can extract a model spectrum from all of your blobs, and it provides a pretty good fit to the observed spectrum, which you see up there. So this shows the model spectrum overlaid with the observed spectrum. Okay. So the primary output of doing this is a very large set of model parameters, so spectral parameters and spatial parameters, for every single blob, for every iteration, after the chain has converged. So what this means is that all of those parameters are a representation of the plasma conditions throughout that entire supernova remnant. Okay. So what we get from this, the most fundamental thing, is to just make a histogram of each of the blob parameters. So that would look something like this. So here is just number of blobs, and in this case, temperature. But that could also be abundance or ionization age or whatever we wanted. And then since the blobs also have a spatial position, we can also easily make maps of any of those parameters as well. So this shows the volume emission measure. Now, one of the interesting sort of byproducts of this analysis method, it has a unique ability to be able to we can slice up our results in any model dimension that we want. So we can look at a particular component of the plasma and look at all of its properties. For example, we can look at the iron abundance of only the high-temperature plasma, for example. And we could map that, we could make these distributions, whatever we want. Okay. So we'll very quickly go over just a few sample results from some preliminary work. So RCW-103 is the first one. So there's some basic information over here, which I'm not going to go over too much. And so the actual thermal X-ray emission from this hasn't really been studied very much. There's not a lot of work done. The XMM observation, it's relatively long, but not unusually so. Kind of a lot of photons, several million counts. And there are some pretty distinct emission lines in the X-ray spectrum. Which we know from previous work, those lines are not uniform across the face of the remnant, so there's definitely some variation. Okay, so as I said, the most fundamental thing we can do is just make histograms of all of our parameters. So one of the interesting things I want to note here, so this is just four examples of four of the parameters, but you can clearly see there's two different temperature components in this remnant. Okay, so there's one at 0.2 something and one at about 0.5 or 0.6 keV. Okay, and we're going to come back to that in a second. I also want to point out we can make maps. So we could make temperature maps or abundance maps or whatever. This is a volume emission measure map. And the thing I want to point out is that these results we get out represent the physical conditions in the remnant. So normally, so this looks kind of like an X-ray image, but it's not the same thing. So this is unabsorbed. Right, so this is the emission measure in the thing itself. So it's not quite the same as the typical X-ray image that you would see. Okay, back to those two temperature components. So this is kind of the interesting thing that we can do. So here I've made similar results, distributions and maps. So this is emission measure map, ionization age map, and the ionization age distribution of only the high temperature gas and only the low temperature gas. So you can clearly see they look different. So spatially, they're distributed very differently. The ionization age maps don't look the same. And you can see the low temperature gas tends to be in equilibrium and the high temperature gas, that's not really true. Okay, so you can start to see these differences for different things. And we can do this for any subset of the plasma that we want. I could have chosen, you know, high density gas and low density gas and made those same plots. Okay. So the next one is W49B. So this is an interesting one we heard about several times. So basic information over here again. The thing I want to mention is we heard yesterday, this is thought to be from a bipolar explosion. And our observation, it's fairly short, 18 kiloseconds, half a million photons, and again, emission lines, which are, again, not uniform. And I want to point out there's a strong iron line, which is kind of interesting. Okay, so we can do the same kinds of things for W49B, plasma distribution. So this one does not have two distinct temperature components or anything else, but we could still make all of those maps if we wanted to. So there's the emission measure map again, and separated it based on density. So I'm going to actually skip ahead over that. We can look at that later if we want. And jump to something else that's different. So some of the first evidence in Laura's paper in 2013 that this was a bipolar explosion was by comparing the abundance ratios to predictions from these models. So this is from the Nemoto and Maeda models. So these three models up here. So we can do the same thing. So we can make these abundance ratios very easily once we have the SPI results and then just compare them. So we get basically the same results from that original paper where the model that matches best is this bipolar explosion model with a 15-degree opening angle. So it's this solid line. So that lines up the closest to the peaks of any of these three models. So the point I want to make with this is not that this is some fancy new result. The point I want to make is that this is a very common thing to do for supernova remnants, and it's very useful. And as we just saw in the last, a couple talks ago, being able to measure abundances is important. And when this was originally done, it required 220 kiloseconds of Chandra observations, right? A million photons. This, we get basically the same result with half a million photons and 18 kiloseconds of XMEM data. So what that means is that it opens up this type of analysis for a lot more remnants because we can't necessarily take hundreds of kiloseconds of data on every remnant, right? So that's the main point I wanted to make with this. Okay, so just to kind of wrap up, this method addresses a lot of the drawbacks that more standard X-ray analysis approaches have, especially when it comes to trying to map the entire volume of a remnant and see what all of the shocked plasma looks like. It also has this ability to be able to measure and to be able to explore the different plasma components a lot more fully than you can in other measurements. So this is W49B. I think this is the distribution of low temperature gas, or not low temperature, high density and low density, for example. And that stuff all comes pretty easily once you have done this fitting. All of this stuff comes out really without too much trouble. And in the future, we have a lot more work to do. So in future conference, when you hear me talking about this, hopefully I will be actually showing you results and not just introducing you to the method. So our full sample of 14 XMM observed remnants that we have chosen to start with, so the two I showed you are here. So there's a few little technical things we want to work on first, so start using this on the RDS data, which is much higher spectral resolution, and also work on how to deal with non-thermal emission, which is present in a lot of these remnants. But mostly, we want to be able to apply it to all of these, which have lots of different ages and types and environments. So we should have descriptions of the full volume of the shocked plasma, which gives us more insight into the individual remnants, but also should allow us to compare and see what kinds of differences there are, and if that can tell us anything about determining ages or types or environment and how those things affect all of these parameters. So you can look forward to seeing more plots like I showed you for all of these other remnants in the next several years. Thanks.
Okay, questions for Carrie? Let's start over here. Sorry, yeah. Go ahead, no.
Yeah. Okay, thank you for this very interesting method. I had a question which was rather technical. You compare your inference to the event files, but how do you deal with all the cosmic and instrumental background events that are in these files? And can you apply this method to objects which have not that many photons from the SNRs?
So for the background, in our model, there are background components. So we're basically fitting the background at the same time. So that's how we deal with the background. So there's several different components for that, for the X-ray galactic background and extragalactic background and some instrumental background. And then for the number of photons, our estimate right now is something like 100,000 photons, maybe, is what we think we need to do this at a minimum. So I can try it with fewer, but they're such complex objects that... So basically, you need to have enough photons per blob to be able to map things out properly.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, go ahead, Jack.
I have a question about blobs. How do you deal with overlapping blobs? Are all your blobs independent? Or do you sum them, sum the density of blobs when they overlap, or are they all independent?
So we don't really sum the density, except if I'm making images, like the maps that I showed you, then I can combine them however I want in my little image pixels, which I make up.
So can you give me a picture, a three-dimensional picture? These blobs look sort of just stacked up in and then projected down on the plane of the sky? And summed up in that way?
Yes, basically. Basically, yes.
Okay.
So they don't move around in the third dimension. They only move around in 2D.
Sure.
But basically, that's what it is. So as far as the procedure is considered, those photons come from the same two-dimensional position.
Okay.
But the blobs themselves, the thermal properties and the things, don't have to be correlated at all.
Sure.
So.
Okay, thank you.
Let's go to Steve.
Well, it seems like an extremely powerful tool. You may have answered my question implicitly. Evidently, you're not constrained to have the same class of models for your blobs. So you can have a single, and it looked like your atomistic blob was in any a single component NEI. Is that correct?
Yes. So each blob has to have the same class of model. So in this case, all of them had, for the RCW-103, for example, they all used the VP shock model,
but their
individual parameters are not tied to each other at all.
But you couldn't, for instance, put in a continuum model, an SR-cut model or something.
Yeah, so I can use most of the sort of standard expect models I could choose. So the only restriction is that every blob has to have the same fundamental model.
So the blobs do all have to have the same model.
Yeah. Yes.
Okay.
That is one of the hard parts about this.
So
that's why adding the non-thermal stuff that makes it more complicated.
So you were fitting the background with VP shock models?
No. So the model can have many components. So there's a background component plus the VP shock component. And each blob has that.
I see.
So each blob will contribute a little bit to the background.
So you could then have each blob have a VP shock plus an SR cut.
Yes. So that's basically how I plan to deal with some of the other types of emission that will be present.
Okay, last question.
Basically, it depends. So he asked, how do I decide how many blobs? It basically depends on how many photons are in the data and how, which is also somewhat correlated to how complex the information is. So you want to have a certain number of photons per blob to be able to fit the spectral properties. And with supernova remnants, also you need enough to be able to map the morphology properly. So typically, it seems to be a few hundred blobs are required for this. So 1 to 400.
And the bonus question?
Well, I'm going to add on to this. So I'm wondering how degenerate your search space is. I mean, you know, you have a certain number of blobs, and you have, I guess, X, Y, Z positions for these blobs. But I mean, Well, I mean, so you don't have pieces because you said they can overlap the blob.
They can overlap, but we don't actually set the third dimension.
Okay, but I mean, essentially, how degenerate is your space? Like, you know, do you use this information in some sort of error estimate of your parameters?
Yes, so we can do that. So there is some amount of degeneracy which would show up, for example, in these distributions. It sort of smears this out a little bit. But we can get some estimation of the uncertainties by comparing the different iterations. So every individual iteration is a statistically acceptable representation of the remnant, of the plasma in the remnant. So if you compare how much it varies from iteration to iteration, you can tell how well you've constrained things. So
one quick comment to this. I think you're doing a maximum posterior approach for at least doing the blobs, which is great. I think differential evolution might be faster than Markov chains. Just a comment that might help you.
What kind of a?
Differential evolution is an optimization algorithm that might be faster than your Markov chains.
Okay, I will look into that, because faster is definitely better.
Okay, let's thank the speaker again.